So, what is ham radio anyway? We've got a UK perspective coming in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm Larry McGlore, KB9DIP, with the March 24th Rain Report Hamcast. When one hears a discussion about amateur radios interfacing with digital technology, like Echolink, JT65, FT8, and even RTTY, invariably some diehard 80-meter redneck has nothing better to say than, that's not real ham radio. So just what is real ham radio? For a European perspective, we turn to Chris Rollinson, G7DDN. Chris recently penned and voiced a commentary addressing this question.
It's not real ham radio, by Chris, G7DDN. I was musing recently on the wonderful history of amateur radio, from the early pioneers with spark transmitters and the race to get the first signals across the Atlantic, all the way up to the microwave enthusiasts who developed the way forward for space communications and satellite technology, and whisper this, yes, mobile phone technology too. The history of ham radio and RF technology is inextricably linked. There was even a time here in the UK where it was believed, anecdotally at least, that a ham radio call sign could help you to get a job with the BBC. However, change came very quickly, relatively speaking, in the early history of radio. From Marconi's experiments to the first public broadcast stations was only 25 or so years, and TV was only another 15 years or so behind that, and so on. Yet the history of ham radio is also one of resistance to change, not from the pioneers, they were often the instigators of it, but from the everyday hams. Let me see if I can give you some examples with my tongue planted very firmly in my cheek. The early hams used CW pretty much exclusively, so when AM arrived as one of the first of the voice modes, there was a bit of an uproar. It's not real ham radio! Real ham radio involves using a Morse key! What in the world is the hobby coming to? Using voice to communicate over the airwaves. It's sacrilege. But life went on. AM found acceptance and all was well in hamland once again. Then transistor technology arrived in the late 1940s and early 1950s, provoking quite a response. Hang on, that's not real ham radio. Real ham radio is glow-in-the-dark. We can't be having this miniature technology. They'll never last as long as valves or be as reliable. But life went on. Solid-state devices found acceptance, and all was well in hamland once again. Then SSB arrived, and there was more discontent. That's not real ham radio. Real ham radios don't sound like Donald Duck. It's a fad. It'll soon fall away once people get fed up of hearing those silly voices. But life went on. SSB found acceptance, and all was well in hamland once again. Then FM and repeaters arrived, and there was polarisation within the hobby, and it wasn't horizontal or vertical I'm talking about either. That's not real ham radio. Real ham radio doesn't need to use that thing on top of that hill to help your signal get somewhere. Real ham radio is point to point. But life went on. FM and repeaters found acceptance, and all was well in hamland once again. Then packet radio arrived, and there was real trouble. That's not real ham radio. Real ham radio doesn't need one of those newfangled computer thingies in order to work. Get your key out, get your mic out, and start working other hams properly. But life went on. Packet radio found acceptance, and all was well in hamland once again. Then digimodes arrived, and there was yet more strife. That's not real ham radio. Real ham radio doesn't involve typing messages to other hams and those perishing computers again. What on earth are they doing in our hobby? But life went on. Digimodes found acceptance and all was well in hamland once again. Then digital voice modes arrived and there were some very serious disagreements. That's not real ham radio. Real ham radios don't sound like R2-D2. Real ham radios don't use the internet to help them get round the world. They absolutely have to use atmospheric propagation. What is happening to this hobby? But life went on. D-Star and other digital voice modes found acceptance, and all was well in hamland once again. Then we arrive at today, and network radios come on the scene. And all hell breaks loose. that's not real ham radio. This is playing at ham radio. There's no amateur RF, so it simply isn't ham radio. What's more, I worked hard for my licence and everyone else should have to too. How dare people enjoy communications in an incorrect manner? So, will life go on and will all ever be well in hamland once again? It's the 21st century challenge. This is why the advent of network radios represents such a challenge to us as hams. It's causing us to completely rethink what it means to be a radio amateur in 2018 and beyond. And we will have to start facing up to questions similar to these. What exactly defines a radio amateur? What do we mean by amateur RF? Is it RF generated by someone who is an amateur? Or is it RF generated on a particular band allocated to us by a government? If so, does it absolutely have to be that? Can it be nothing else? Or does any of all this really matter anyway? And what about our bands? As hams, we're very attached to our bands. Whether it's 160 metres or 2 metres, we almost have a psychological sense of ownership of them. We have favourite bands. We have bands we never frequent. We even have our spot frequencies. And you know as well as I that some hams will get somewhat assertive if a fellow amateur is not a member of their group dares to use their frequency. And yet, in the 21st century, I believe this whole concept of bands and frequencies could be becoming ever more fluid. Why would this be? Let me give you an example from broadcast radio. Not that long ago, we could tune into broadcast stations on long wave, LF, medium wave, MF, short wave, HF, and FM on VHF band 2. Stations frequently referred to themselves by frequency. This is 247 metres radio 1. Or, hi, it's 11:52 AM, for example. That was seen as part of the station's identity. Many of them had the frequency as part of their station names. But today we're increasingly hearing less of this. When you listen to broadcast stations these days, they seem to be eschewing giving out frequencies. Instead, they just kind of do a general announcement that they are available on FM, DAB and digital, or something similar to that. Now, why is that happening? It's probably because radio is something you increasingly consume in one of two ways, either digitally via DAB or satellite or similar means, or by streaming via the internet. So frequencies, and by extension, bands, are not as relevant as they once were. The large broadcasters are also increasingly moving away from traditional radio. On shortwave, only a few countries and various religious groups seem to operate there now. The big guys are also moving out of long and medium wave too. So if commercial broadcasters are moving away, we really need to ask why. I have a suspicion that this is, in part at least, because bands and frequencies don't matter so much these days. Domestic radio appliances are more about push buttons and screens that get you to your station instantly, rather than tuning dials with frequencies. It's the end product, in other words, that's important, and not necessarily the manner in which it gets to you. Who tunes a modern broadcast radio in these days with a manual tuning dial? Anyone? It was the main knob on all radios not that many years ago. I can even remember tuning old VHF TV in with a dial in my early days on this planet, and tuning TV with a dial, well, that seems really odd now.
You're in the middle of a commentary written and voiced by Chris Rawlinson, G7DDN, an active ham in the UK. We'll conclude his thoughtful commentary in a moment. This is The Rain Report, which updates Saturdays on therainreport.com, and on shortwave, Saturday nights on WTWW out of Lebanon, Tennessee, on 5085 kHz. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Going one step further, many broadcast stations are not even using direct RF at all. We still refer to them as radio stations, or maybe occasionally internet radio stations. So is there any reason to think ham radio as a hobby will not invariably move in a similar kind of direction eventually? One of our strengths historically as radio hams has been that we're good at embracing new technologies and really good at adapting them for our own uses. The point I'm leading up to really is this. I suspect that bands and frequencies are not really as big an issue in the digital age as we might perhaps like them to be. Now, in essence, our bands only exist because of propagation. All the amateur bands, 160, 40, 80, 20, 10 metres, 2 metres, all of them, in reality, are line-of-sight-only bands. To oversimplify a difficult subject, it's the ionospheric or tropospheric layers that enhance that line-of-sight propagation, and they transform it and turn it into something else that gives us long-distance propagation. Each band has differing propagation qualities as a result, giving each band its character. And for some people, the study of propagation in itself is a fascinating part of the hobby. When we think of and use the internet as a man-made propagating medium, which is what it is, it propagates signals around the world, then the concept of bands becomes redundant. The internet, this man-made propagation, is like one almost infinitely wide worldwide band, constantly open, constantly S9 plus 40 to all countries around the world, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with very few vagaries, and not just for voice, but for vision and all kinds of other modes, digital modes as well. Put like that, who wouldn't want to use it? Would it actually matter what band you were or were not on, even if there were one? So the concept of bands by which so many of us define our activities may be crumbling in front of us in this digital age, and we may not even realise it yet. Now, that's not to say that our bands don't still exist, by the way. Clearly they do. It's just that to many people these days, bands are a foreign concept. And then what? As the hobby starts to come to terms with some of the implications of this, all kinds of issues begin to arise, such as, do we need an exam anymore to get a licence? Do we even need a licence? What form should it take if so? Might we see an influx of new people coming into the hobby because the entry to it is more straightforward? How would we cope with that? Do we even want new people coming in, especially if their views are different from ours? What will the hobby even look like in 20 years' time? And what will happen to our traditional bands? I expect to see a lot of discussion in the future about this, and I find it actually quite exciting. However, it will make many of us feel extremely uncomfortable. The ground is shifting beneath our feet, and the traditional raison d'etre of ham radio is waiting to be challenged to change and to adapt. I don't see this as a totally bad thing, if I'm honest. Intelligent, honest debate is always to be welcomed. The most important thing is to keep our minds and our thinking wide open. We shouldn't just reject something out of hand just because it's new, or just because it challenges our own preconceived ideas of where radio should go. Equally, we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater and reject traditional ham radio as it has been for years. Surely the ionosphere and the internet are complementary and not in competition. If you've listened this far and you haven't switched off and you really want my personal thoughts, why can't we have the best of both worlds? Surely we can. Network radios, at this stage in their development at least, are not contest radios, for example, and the internet is not yet a contest-friendly mode of propagation. I mean, that might change, of course. So contesting, for example, is still best on the traditional ham bands. I'll see you on 80 metres, 59001, old man. However, regular, reliable, high-quality contacts around the world are but one thing that network radios excel at. So why not just use that when you want to? Or when the HF bands are so full of noise, or are otherwise dead? I do. I don't see the expansion of choice in the hobby as a bad thing. To me, enjoyment is the key. Does the fact that I'm transmitting on a cellular frequency at, say, 800 MHz, 900, 1800, 2100 MHz, or perhaps even on Wi-Fi at 2.4 GHz or 5 GHz, does that matter? Is there something intrinsically evil about that? Is it more virtuous to use 21 MHz or 432 MHz, for example? They're just frequencies, after all. I prefer to see myself following the motto of my local radio club, having fun with RF. Whether I choose to use a network radio or a Yaycom Wood super-duper base station is not really as relevant to me. Enjoyment of the hobby is everything. Otherwise, why have a hobby? Whichever way this debate goes, and whichever direction this great hobby takes, my line would be to keep all the richness of every aspect of the hobby. In other words, to go back to the title of this piece and change but one word, it's all real ham radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Chris Rollinson, G7DDN.
This has been a commentary written and voiced by British Ham, Chris Rollinson, G7DDN. You'll find a written copy of Chris's commentary on his website, g7ddn.com, and click on articles. Chris happens to be a musician, and he has a new album, Piano Reflections, now available on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Amazon Music. He also has a YouTube channel. Your rebuttal to Chris's commentary is always welcome, preferably in MP3 format, and email to hap@therainreport.com. That's hap, H-A-P, with one P, @therainreport.com. The Rain Report Hamcast updates Saturdays on therainreport.com and via shortwave Saturday nights on WTWW out of Lebanon, Tennessee on 5085 kilohertz. I'm Larry McGlore, KB9DIP, bidding you a very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming.